Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey there, in this episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, you are going to listen to a replay of the Authentic Persuasion training sessions that are live each week. So in this replay, I'm taking that session, having it here so that you can listen to it, take notes, replay it, digest it, and then put these things into action. If you'd like, make sure to set your calendars for Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, so that you can tune in live. If you want to register and sign up for free, make sure to go to jasoncutter.com, and there's a link on there. Or you can email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com as well, and I can get you the information for signing up. All right, hope you have your notepad ready to go. Let's dive into this replay of the Authentic Persuasion training session. Hey, everybody. What's going on? Jason Cutter here. It is Friday, June 3rd. Can't believe it is June already. Not quite halfway through the year, but here we are, definitely entering the final stretches of the first half of the year. I'm super excited. It is noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. This is the weekly live Authentic Persuasion training session. This is session number 34. Super glad that you're here. Love to see people logging in and watching this on the Zoom webinar link, but also live on LinkedIn, on the Facebook Cutter Consulting Group page, as well as YouTube. It's kind of fun to see different things where I can monitor as we go through this. I love it. Right now, I am in Florida. I'm in Southwest Florida, where I moved to. We have a tropical storm coming this way. I'm excited for two reasons. One, the tropical storm isn't going to hit till tomorrow, so it looks like we'll be good. The last few Fridays, we've had some storms where one time it cut out the power and the internet and it caused a little hiccup in the middle of our show. So I'm excited that's not hitting until tomorrow, so hopefully we can get through this error-free, issue-free, technical problem-free. The other part is having moved to Florida a year ago, went through a tropical storm last year. Obviously, hurricanes make it much worse, but for me, I just love the rain and the storm and the lightning and sitting outside and the covered porch and just kind of experiencing all that. All this stuff is fun and exciting to me, being a guy from California who also lived in Washington State, but we don't have these kind of like East Coast tropical thunderstorms. So for me, it's kind of fun. Looking forward to that. It's also a nice excuse to just hang out and be inside. So today, let's go ahead and dive into this. So this is the weekly training sessions. If you've been a longtime follower, you know the last few sessions I've done has been Q&A mode, both for sales leaders a few times ago, and then most recently, and most of them are more for salespeople. So if you're in sales, if you have sales as a part of your role, and super side note, everything in life is sales. So fundamentally, it applies to everyone. But if you're in sales or you run a team and you have salespeople and you want to try to find some things to help them or maybe identify some things, then you're in the right place. Super excited over the next 30, 35 minutes or however long I go on for. I'm going to answer some questions that I've seen, I've been asked, or I've just generally know come up over and over again in the things that I do because I want to give back. I want to help you with these questions. These things that pop up with how do you deal with price and what if you're an order taker and, you know, hesitating with picking up the phone and, you know, the kind of stuff that I covered last time and then where we're going to go this time. And I want to just cover these topics, give you some help, give you some support, help you shift from order taker to deal maker to see the power of using authentic persuasion in addition to what you're doing in sales and fundamentally to help shift the way sales is done. Sales is a gross, dirty word. I was on a podcast yesterday, and it just keeps coming up where I struggle with saying sales, and I did forever. I didn't think I was in sales because I was in sales, sales being persuasion and sales being service to help somebody. But I would never use the word sales because to me, sales growing up was that gross, dirty thing that people do to manipulate somebody else and push them into buying something they may or may not want so that the salesperson can win, right? And I have so many stories growing up and us going to car dealerships as a kid where it was just this battle and this gross feeling and just this tension. And that's what I always thought sales was. And I didn't realize that the other things in sales, the positive, the service, the sales being something you're doing for somebody and with somebody is actually still sales
it's the persuasion, it's the influence, it's those positive things, but it's still classified as sales and selling and helping someone buy and make that right decision. But a lot of times we don't want to use that word because the negative connotation, right? Sales might as well be a four-letter word in most people's minds. So that's why I do this. That's why I'm helping the shift. That's what I want you to focus on. If you're in sales, not just if you're struggling to get any results, but even if you're getting results and you want to do better, you want to be more effective, you want to close more deals, you want to make more money, you want to feel better and better about what you do and helping people and providing solutions and being that guide instead of trying to be the hero in the story, then you're in the right place. I'm super excited you're here. Please give this a thumbs up, a like, wherever you're watching this live or in the replay. Again, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, or if you're listening to this on the podcast replay, welcome. If you're not and you love podcasts, make sure to subscribe to the Authentic Persuasion Show. In a few weeks, teaser, I am launching season 6 and I am going to come out swinging like crazy like I've done in the past. But season 6, I am super excited for. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of stuff to help you, whether you're running a team or you're closing deals. So let's dive into this session. I don't want to do a lot of intro. Like sometimes I get excited and I just want to cover a lot of background stuff. Let's get into the questions. These ones are pretty straightforward questions. Let's go through them as much as we can. All right. Question number one. I am struggling with getting past gatekeepers. What should I do? How should I approach that? So there's a couple of things. And I learned this from my mentor, David Meltzer, who says this all the time. There's no such thing as a gatekeeper. When you say gatekeeper, right, this is just a beginning part. When you say gatekeeper, you're really putting that negative energy on that. Right. And you're really subconsciously, consciously, you're making it a battle. It's me versus you. If I say you're a gatekeeper, that means you're blocking the gates. You are keeping the gate and you're keeping me from what I want, which is a decision maker, is somebody else. When you do that, that's subconsciously, consciously, energetically making it an adversarial discussion, conversation, approach, feeling, vibe, in everything that you're doing, right? Before you make the call, when you talk to that person who's not the decision maker, and then in that moment afterwards, how you feel about it. A lot of times I just hear people, salespeople, BDRs, SDRs talking about gatekeepers. And it's really about how do I get past them? How do I get over them, around them, under them, through them? How do I call when they're not around so that I don't have to deal with them? And it's just this me versus you, or you're keeping me from what I want, right? You're in the way of my success. And that's not true, right? That is not the way it should be. And that's not a productive way to be. When you have that adversarial energy, you're just going to battle against it all the time. It's not going to be effective. So the best thing to say, and this is what I focus people on, is there's decision makers and there's non-decision makers, right? The decision maker is the one you want to get to that meets the qualifications of what you're looking for when you're trying to get to that person, right? We're talking B2B for the most part. There's also in the B2C world, it might be you need one person in the family who's the decision maker, the person, let's say, who's in charge of the finances or whatever you might be trying to sell. And then there's the non-decision maker, which might be the spouse or the other person, right? And so it's not that they're keeping you from it. It's the decision maker and the non-decision maker. And the key is to focus on that. So first, reframing that internally, externally is not gatekeeper, removing that from your language, banishing that from the things that you say, the things that you write out, the things that you feel. It's not me versus you. It's me and you. Here's who I want to get to. I want to get to that decision maker, and I would love your help. I would love information. I would love to have you as a resource, a champion, someone who's helping me with my mission and move forward. Here's the biggest thing in addition to that is this whole like struggling with the gatekeeper, with the non-decision maker. What should you do? You first have to have something you're selling or want to sell, that you want this company to buy from you or sign up or enroll in, that's actually valuable and useful for them. This goes back to what I talk about a lot, where a lot of people in sales, a lot of individual contributors, as well as companies, think they are the hero. They think not just that they're the hero, but that everybody should want what they're selling. They think they've discovered the next greatest thing and everyone should want it and everyone should be begging for it. And they should be grateful that they're being called out of the blue and pestered and or harassed with calls and emails, right? They just think they've bought it. They drank the Kool-Aid. They think they're the hero of the story. And they're doing it wrong, in my opinion. And this goes back to things I've talked about many times, which is the other person, the decision maker, the individual you're talking to, that other human also thinks they are the hero of the story. And so they think it's all about them. And you want to be the guide. But first, you have to have something that people actually want and need that's actually going to help somebody. I see so many times people in this role, especially with their adversarial feelings towards the gatekeeper, where they are selling something that the world may or may not need. Probably the world doesn't know that it might want, or it's not too much different than what's already in place. So many times I see people trying to sell the 18th CRM out there that is different and better than all CRMs, which is not true because there is only so much you can do with a CRM, and then it still takes the human side, right? Like if you want to say, no, but the CRM is not very effective. Yeah, but is the team actually using it right? And so are you selling something people would actually find valuable? If you do, when you get on the phone with that non-decision maker, right, previously known as the gatekeeper, then what happens is, hey, I have this. I think this would be useful. And then you're getting them on board. You want to figure out information. You want to use them as a source of info, a resource to help you in your journey to A, determine if it's a good fit for the company, and then B, get to the right person, whoever that is. Instead of seeing it about me versus you and how do I trick you? How do I pretend to be a customer? How do I do this? How do I? Instead, it's okay, here's what I'm looking for. You get that person on the phone. Maybe it's the executive assistant, it's the office assistant, it's the person in sales that you get to, but you need to talk to someone in marketing or the owner of the company. And instead of, you know, trying to get through them as quickly as possible, ask them lots of questions. Figure out what you can. Pre-qualify as much as you can to see if the company is even a good fit. And if so, great. Now they're on board. Help them help you. Make them a part of the process and get them on board. Now, here's what I will tell you. This is fundamentally true over and over again. If you call a company and that initial person you talk to, the non-decision maker, the previously known as the gatekeeper, if they shut you down, if they're rude, if they're closed-minded, if they're not eager to talk, if they are unhelpful in any way, there's only so much you can do. I mean, you can try to crack jokes, you can try to make things lighter or easier, you can try to, you know, call it like it is, that it's a cold call and that you're there to help. But fundamentally, if they're that shut down, I promise that comes from the top down. Now, of course, that person could be having a bad day. That happens all the time. You know, set it aside, call them back another time and give it another shot. But fundamentally, if that's the same reaction you get over and over again, that is the company culture. Somebody raised that person in that company to act that way. And what I have found from experience is that if it's not just them having a bad day, but that's the way it is, and that's the way their boss has made them interact with people, what happens is by the time if you do get to the decision maker, it's going to be the same thing, right? They are raising someone like they see the world, and it's going to be difficult. So there's a balance there with how open-minded somebody is, that initial person you talk to, but you also can't just look for the easy ones. You've got to get them on board. So the best thing to do if you're struggling with getting past gatekeepers, non-decision makers, is just have a conversation. Treat them with respect. And when in doubt, this is what I say is the fundamental tip for anybody in sales. Fundamentally, number one thing, when in doubt, do the opposite of what you think you should be doing on those calls. Meaning, well, everyone who's an SDR, BDR, account executive salesperson, this is the approach, right? Well, maybe the opposite is what you should do, right? That's why I'm a huge fan of calling it like it is, letting them know this is a cold call, letting them know what your intentions are, and then getting their help, right? Instead of trying to be slick or phony or fake or move past them or go through them or bully them or harass them, right? Or trick them. Don't. be authentic, be you, call it like it is, do the opposite of what you think salespeople should do. And here's why. Here's why this is so important before I move on to the next one. The reason why that is so important is you've got to be empathetic and understanding of what that person is dealing with that non-decision maker, gatekeeper, phone answering person is dealing with is a ton of people like you calling them all day, every day, trying to get to that decision maker. And they're doing it in a way that companies think is the best way to do it, that the gurus and the sales trainers are teaching people to do, and the slick lines and these strategies. And the, you know, when I see these things on LinkedIn, it's about, okay, what I learned from my million cold calls, right? And how they just abuse that initial person they talk to on the phone or what they're doing. So think about it from their perspective. Is that person is getting those calls all the time. And it's, even though everyone works for different companies, seems to follow a similar pattern. And the reason I can say that is because I get those calls. Because I have my business, I get these calls all the time. People call me and they're so formulaic. They're so standard in their approach, in their voicemails, in the emails I get following up. Just want to move this to the top of your inbox. Just want to see blah, blah, blah. Like it's literally the same crap over and over again. So that person you're calling is seeing that same crap over and over again. And they just tuned it out, or they just put you in the bucket with everyone else and they're not interested and they don't want to help you because they're tired of these calls, right? Just for the same reason. I've said this many times on LinkedIn. Same reason. I am tired of all the people who hit me up on LinkedIn promising me 3 to 5 qualified leads every half of a second if I just hire them because they will do all my outreach, right? And most people, especially if you're a coach, consultant, anything like that on LinkedIn, you get those all the time. And I just shut them all down because I put them all in the same bucket. There could be someone valuable in there, but when everyone takes that same approach, nothing is going to get through. It's all going to get tuned out, which is what happens. So when in doubt, do something completely different. Do the opposite of what you think you should be doing. And if you want help on this, let me know. Reach out to me. Send me a DM, but not about leads that you can sell me or help me generate. But send me a DM, or you can always email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. And I will give you some guidance, some tips, or it might be something to provide some coaching or training for you and your company around is how to have those conversations, how to build a different process, how to move your conversations forward and get to more decision makers. All right. Question number 2, my sales keeps canceling. How can I get them not to cancel? So my sales keep canceling, which means that this person in particular with this question is they're making the enrollments, they're making the sales, they're finishing the deal, contract signed, money paid, moving them over to the next stage, to the onboarding, to the client side, the fulfillment side, all that stuff. And then people are canceling and wanting refunds. So they're not sticking. So the real question is, how do I get them not to cancel? And this is such a loaded, deep question. In fact, I did a session. I don't remember which one it was. It was probably somewhere in the 12 to 18, session number 12 to 18, somewhere in that range. If you can't find it, please send me a DM or put a comment in below and I'll reply back with the link where I talked about the cancellation paradox and then also how to prevent and mitigate buyer's remorse. It was 2 different sessions because each one of those are chapters in Selling with Authentic Persuasion. And it's things that I focus on and help a lot of teams with in the training. So there's a lot to cover. The basics, though, of it is how do you get them not to cancel? So there's 3 main things. The first is you've got to make sure you're doing a good job with your sales process, right? There's a lot of times what I see is salespeople are generally weak. And this goes for a lot of salespeople when it comes to fully disclosing and covering everything that a buyer is going to care about. Not what you care about, not what your company thinks that everyone should care about, but what the buyer actually cares about. So many salespeople, most salespeople I see, especially if they're not in the category of what I would say sales professional with consistent results, you know, with long-term clients or enrolling people into something where there is a high retention rate, they are under explaining or under setting the expectations or over promising the benefits and or how easy it is. Because no matter what, when somebody signs up for something, buys something, enrolls in something, there is always a process and there's always a trade-off. Now, the trade-off might be you're paying this and I need you to do this work or fill out these forms or do this onboarding or submit these documents, right? Like you want to buy a house, you want to get a mortgage. That sounds great. Filling out the application, that's the first part. Now we need this, we need this, we need this, we need this. You need to go through this and blah, 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 right? There's all these things. There is a trade-off. If you don't set those expectations up front, what happens? You say, okay, this is great. We'll fill out the application and we'll get you started right away. And then next thing you know, like somebody's committed and then you send them this list of everything. And they're like, wait, I didn't know I had homework. Like this is terrible. And it's only terrible or mostly terrible because you didn't set the expectation. You did not fully let them know what the process was going to look like and what they were committing to and their part in the process. And then what happens is buyer's remorse really kicks in. Sometimes they put their head in the sand. Sometimes people just get lazy and thought that everything was just going to happen for them and they wanted instant gratification. And then they're just gone. Absolutely gone. Not interested. Want to cancel, stop the process. Maybe want their money back, cancel their contract, whatever that might be. So that's the first part is you've got to make sure you set the right expectation. Now, what you want to be careful of, and I've seen this before, is I call it laundry listing, which is where the salesperson laundry lists everything that's going to happen and overwhelm somebody with all of the details. And now it seems like a burden. Now it seems overwhelming and they don't want to move forward with it either, right? Or they change their mind because they're like, wow, that is a lot of work. I don't want to do it. So you've got to be careful. You want to set the right expectation of the involvement. You don't have to always give them every detail, but you have to at least set the right expectation. When they become a customer, they sign the contract, they paid, whatever that looks like, they bought something or they signed up for something. You want to make sure they understand what they're really getting. Salespeople love to cover the highlights, the exciting things, the minimum amount that it takes to get somebody sign up, and just kind of hope that somebody else will deal with the other parts, right? Hope that they don't ask about a contract or the terms, or don't ask about like this and that and these kind of things, right? So they just want to undersell is essentially what they're doing, which is here's all the highlights, this is the exciting things. And then hopefully you won't change your mind, or hopefully someone else will save my deal for me. And that's just bad. That's just terrible. That is self-centered salespeople not caring about the customer or the company. They're only focusing on their commission check, their bonus, their job security, the deal they need today. They're not thinking about what's going to happen to that deal tomorrow. Usually, and I don't blame the salespeople for that so much, I put that on the company. The company, for some reason, is hiring and raising salespeople in a way that that's okay. Right? Instead of making them responsible and holding them accountable to what happens, they're letting those salespeople just run that game. And I put that on the company. Also put it on the company if they don't have a compensation plan or rules or structures or things in the job description for a cancellation rate, the amount that's acceptable, because there's always going to be some. That's what I talked about in the cancellation paradox. But the fact that they don't have those parameters in place to kind of control that and know who's doing it right and who's potentially doing it wrong, that's also on the company. If you're just letting it be the Wild West and you're letting salespeople do whatever salespeople want to do in order to make the most money they can, you kind of deserve what's going to happen to you as a company, which unfortunately, customer service, client success, accounting, billing, tech support, retention, all of those post-sales departments are the ones who have to bear the burden of that and the pain of it. And I've seen many organizations where the owner only cares about sales. They're a sales-minded owner. And so they lean on the salespeople. They leverage it. They think sales is the golden child. And then everyone else is just basically the bastard children in the organization. And they're left to clean up the mess from sales. Not to put salespeople down. But if that's you, you really want to make sure you shift your focus, your mindset, your sales conversations to setting people up with the right expectation. I firmly believe, and I've proven it over and over again, that you can set the right expectation, full expectation of what's going to happen, disclose what's going to happen, even the trade-offs, because nothing is perfect. There's no perfect solution. It's either expensive and it has less of a downside. Or if it's cheap, it's going to have more downsides. It's going to take more effort, right? Like they say, good, fast, and cheap, two out of the three, but never all three. There's always a trade-off with every product, service, anything like that. If you want something amazing, it's going to be really expensive, and it's probably going to take a long time to be done, but that's how it works. And so if you want to have long-term clients, if you want to avoid those cancels, that is the key, is that first part. Now, I didn't plan on going into so much detail on that first of those three, but that's the most important one, because that's the one you can control the best. The second part, which is what I covered, and you know, again, message me or leave a comment and I will send you, or you can email me. I will send you the link for the preventing buyer's remorse section. Or if you have selling with authentic persuasion, check out that chapter in the book, because it talks about how do you mitigate that buyer's remorse, which then leads to cancels. Remember, they're afraid, right? They got excited in the process and then they had time to think about it. And then if you remember the model and diagram from the authentic persuasion pathway, what happens is you got them outside of their comfort zone. Sometimes it might just be for a moment, and then they run back into it, into the safety and security of their comfort zone, where they know what it is and they see what happened as danger, and they're grateful to cancel because they avoided that danger. And so you want to make sure you move them out of their comfort zone for the right reasons, and then you keep them outside of that. And so that's about setting their expectation, and then the follow-ups, making sure they understand that you're with them along the way, or somebody is, making them feel safe and helping them remember over and over again that they made the right, best, safest decision. Remember, safe, S-A-F-E, successful at fear elimination. That's what you want them to be in, that mode where they feel safe and they stay safe. That's how you avoid cancels at a high rate. Now, what you're always going to have is some level of cancels, in my opinion, because what you're doing is moving people out of their comfort zone, and some people are going to retreat back, and you can't stop them all. If you have zero cancels, remember this, I covered this before, that means you're not moving many people outside of their comfort zone. You're probably an order taker. It's probably all the lay down easy ones who are ready to go anyway, and you're really not a salesperson. You're not a sales professional, and you're not actually persuading people. You're just taking orders. So something to keep them out as well. All right. Let's go to the third question. Let me try to get through this one. Keep us on task. So question number three is, the leads my company is giving me aren't very good. What should I do? So the leads aren't very good. What should I do? First off, there are times where the leads aren't very good. I've seen that, right? I'm dealing with companies that have that situation from time to time where the salespeople are going to blame the leads. And sometimes it's actually the leads, right? They're not the right one. They're not the right filters, demographic, not even the right type. You know, it's not the right contacts. There's all kinds of reason why the leads can actually be bad. Before we get into that though, the first thing is to look at yourself. And if you're a company, is to look at yourself as well, especially with the feedback that the salespeople are giving you. But if you're in sales and you want to blame the leads, the question is are you doing everything you can, right? Like I have a program I just launched called the Lead Buyer Success Program. And it's for people, mostly independent salespeople, who are looking at buying leads or they're currently buying leads. So imagine a independent insurance agent, financial advisor, people in those kind of roles where you can either try to get referrals, you could try to knock on doors, or you could buy leads and buy phone calls and buy people who raised their hand and said, yes, I would like help with my insurance. And then you have to convert those. A lot of times, and this is why I built this program, the Lead Buyer Success Program, is because a lot of times people don't know what they're doing with buying those leads. They've been told that they should, or the lead seller talked them into it, and then they don't actually know what they're doing, and then they don't close enough of those leads, and then they blame the leads. One of the common traits that happens is that the salespeople just don't follow up. They think they're buying a customer and not buying a lead or a prospect, and they just assume that person should want to buy, and when that person doesn't want to buy on one call, they never call them again. They're looking for the order takers. They're for the people who just are laydowns, right? They're trying to cherry pick their way through these leads. If you're doing that, whether you're paying for it yourself or the company is providing them to you, you will lose. If your strategy is to cherry pick through the leads to find the easy ones that you can close, I will say it again, you will lose. You will lose if you're buying the leads because you'll find that your cost per acquisition is way too high, or you will lose if you're doing that at a company because they will fire you. because you're not going to be closing enough deals. And they're spending a lot of money feeding you leads, feeding you data, feeding you phone calls. And again, salespeople don't want to hear this. They want to think that everyone is there to serve them. Not everybody. Many salespeople I interact with that are struggling feel like everybody should be there to feed them what they need, give them what they need, and they should just be able to show up and it should just work. And again, that's why I created the Lead Buyer Success Program, is to provide training and coaching and guidance for people who are getting into buying leads for themselves, for their own success, and teaching them how to do that. So a lot of times it's not the leads, it's the process. It's the lack of follow-ups, it's the actual conversations, it's, you know, salespeople not having an actual sales process, not understanding things like the authentic persuasion pathway and people being stuck in their comfort zone and the one things that most prospects fear. Like, there's so many things that go into being successful in sales. The leads are part of it, but usually not the first part. Usually it's not the first thing to point the finger at where the success isn't happening. So there's so many other things. So the first thing is an honest self-reflection assessment of your selling focus, ability, skills, your follow-up, your follow-through, all of those things. And if that's solid, now it's time to look at the leads and blame the leads. That usually solves most of the leads are bad conversation. And I talk to a lot of marketing people who are generating the leads for the sales team, right? Even within an organization. And it's that same conversation, right? Well, I wish they would follow up with it. They're not trying very hard. They're not having the right conversations. And it's because a lot of times in sales, they're just looking for the easy sales, not actually realizing what their job is. Now, back to the actual question. What to do if the leads aren't very good? What should you do? If you can honestly say that it's not you, it's them, right? Like any relationship, it's not me. This is you. You're the problem. There's a couple of things. One is to have a conversation with the leadership in your company and say, I'm doing everything I can. Here's what I'm seeing. We were doing well and now we're not, or I'm doing well on these leads, but not these ones. What can we do? You have to go into that conversation with actual metrics and numbers and things to prove that you're doing your part. Otherwise, it's just going to sound like complaining about leads, which any sales manager has experienced and may or may not have much of a tolerance for it. So that's the first part. The second part is, if you're in a company where they're expecting you to perform, and they're expecting you to work on the leads they provide, and those leads, those data, those calls aren't very good, and it's just a grind, and it's difficult to hit your numbers, and it's not you for the majority of it, then most likely you just don't want to be at that company, right? Now, if there's some portion of it where you can pick your own leads, you can create your own leads, or you can go after sourcing your own things, and they're providing you some, then maybe that's okay. Also, the thing is to understand is that a lot of times in companies, what happens is there's multiple lead sources. Maybe it's Facebook calls, maybe it's these calls, maybe it's these form fills, maybe it's different things. It might also be that one source is not correct or not effective, or, and I see this at times as well, is where individual salespeople are better and they are happier and they like one lead source and they don't like other ones, right? Maybe they're really good at the Facebook, but they don't like the warm transfers, or they really like the form fills, but they don't like these SMS leads that come in, right? Whatever it is, sometimes people make up judgments in their mind about what they like and what they don't like, what they're good at and not good at. And the person next to them probably has this exact opposite feeling, right? Like one person loves online leads, the other one loves phone calls, and they both see the world completely different. That's okay as well. Can you be successful on what the company's giving you and what you have access to? If it's a good company, if it's run well, if their operation is run for the company's success, for the salespeople's success and the customer's success, they will know those numbers and they will ensure that each person is working on the best campaigns that fit them and their effectiveness. And if you're running a company watching or listening to this and you have multiple lead sources and you're not optimizing your team for the lead sources that they're each good at without completely enabling and encouraging them to just be laser focused in a bad way, right? Where they don't want to work hard on anything else because they've made up their mind. But if you have a good, positive company culture and you just want to set people up with the best opportunities possible, reach out to me. There's a couple of very cool technologies that are out there right now that work behind the scenes to actually set people up on your team with the best opportunity for who they do best, both in lead source and also demographic and psychographic, as much as you can get into that with the modeling that's there based on their history. So reach out to me. You can send me a direct message or email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. I have some really cool recommendations I can make for things that are out there for that. Again, if the company is giving you leads and they're not very good, first look at yourself. Always look at yourself. Are you doing everything you can? Are you following up? Are you making more than one follow-up call, right? Are you doing a process over and over again consistently where you can say, this is not me. I'm doing everything I can and I still am struggling with these leads? Or is it the leads itself, right? If it's not you, if it's them, make some decisions. Have a conversation with your company. If you're in charge of your own leads, see where else you can get leads. There's so many different lead sources out there. One thing to watch out for is everyone promises perfect leads, great leads. And I've seen a lot of people get burned on lead sources. I've seen it. I've dealt with it myself. It's painful when it goes wrong if you're not careful. And ultimately, if you're at a company and they're just feeding you garbage and expecting you to make gold out of it, and just hit your numbers, and it's just not possible, and you look around and most everybody else is struggling with that as well, then maybe it's just not a good fit, right? Maybe it's not the place for you. If the company's not making changes, if they're not trying to get better, if they are saying, this is the way it is, this is the way we've always done it, you have to deal with it or else, then that might not be a good fit. Now, there are times where the company is struggling with leads, nobody on the team is winning, or most of the team is struggling, but the team is owning, or the company's owning it, and they're taking ownership of it and accountability, and they're trying things and they're working on it, and they just need everybody to keep on going, keep rowing, keep putting in the effort, and they're just evolving and changing. That's different. The company says, this is the way we've always done it. Suck it. Like, doesn't matter what you think, because this is what we're going to do. Something to assess whether that's the company for you. So that's it for this episode. Many things I mentioned, please DM me, send me an email also, and I'll be launching the page for it soon, but I have my eBooks. I'm bundling them together. So I have the Sales Consultant's Guide 2 series. And so I have Motivating Your Team So You Both Can Win, Overcoming Objections, Both Yours and Theirs. That's for salespeople, because also keep in mind, you have your own objections internally, and then you're dealing with your potential customers' objections. And then also for being a new team lead, whether you're a brand new team lead or you're thinking about being a team lead supervisor, something in that level, that ebook, email me for now. At some point, I'm going to put them on a page so people can just access them. Email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Just say ebooks in there. I'll send you all three as a PDF, just so you can have those resources and hopefully do some more things, some different things. I appreciate everyone for being here. Make sure to hit like, depending on where you're watching this. If you're on YouTube, subscribe, turn that icon on so you get notifications. I'm posting videos all the time on Facebook and LinkedIn. Please make sure to share this. Let's get more of this content out there. Let's fill more of the feeds with the kind of things that help people with the fundamentals, with the foundations. And if you're on the podcast, make sure to subscribe. If you're not on the podcast, but you like podcast episodes and listening to podcasts, make sure to go to wherever you listen to podcasts, find the Authentic Persuasion Show, hit the subscribe button, and get ready, because starting in a few weeks, season 6 is going to come out. And I am super excited. I haven't done a new season in a while. It's just kind of been persisting. And I got to the point where I'm excited. It's going to happen. And that's when I know it's going to be good stuff. So, and for everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being part of this journey in the goal to shift sales from being that dirty word that I mentioned to something the world actually trusts and respects, while also helping you close more deals and make more money. Until next time, thank you for helping me on my journey to fill the world with authentic persuaders.
That's it for the replay of the Authentic Persuasion weekly live training session. Again, make sure to catch them live Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can go to jasoncutter.com to sign up so you can get alerts, put it on your calendar, and have the links for when it goes live. And you can always email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, and I can get you the information to sign up, as well as let me know any questions that you have, topics you want me to cover, or guides that you may be looking for. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.